The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
It's Victor Dandridge, the hardest working man in comics, and you are listening to PVB Cast with John Orlando. Guys, I'm telling y'all it's the best thing on the entire interweb. Listen long, listen strong. John, it's all you, man.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the very first installment of 2019 of the PVD Cast. I'm your host, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 177. I know I've been gone for a couple of weeks because of the holiday season, and I hope you and yours had a very happy holiday season. I hope you had a fun and safe New Year's Eve, but here it is. I'm recording this introduction on January 2nd, 2019. It's a new year. It's time for new guests. It's time for a whole lot of great podcasting goodness right here on the PVD Cast. But let's recap what I've been doing for the last couple of weeks real quick before I talk about my guest for this episode. As I mentioned, I took a couple weeks off because I was traveling. I went out to Eastern Ohio to visit some friends and family. And actually, while I was out there, I managed to go to the theater and catch Aquaman, which, I gotta say, it was really good. Now, was it perfect like Wonder Woman? No, there were a few issues I had in terms of the timing of the movie. Not to ruin it, but in the movie, Aquaman has to complete a series of tasks in order to rule Atlantis. And, you know, there was task one, task two, task three, I think task four. I think some of the scenes with tasks 2 and 3 could have been trimmed down a little bit because it's like 2 hours and 20 minutes long, and I felt like they could have trimmed that down and still had a really good story. But nonetheless, like I said, I gave it an A-. I thought it was pretty well done. The visual effects were amazing. The acting was pretty good. If they could have just tightened up a little bit there, I think it would have been a solid A. But definitely go out and see it if you haven't seen it already. Aquaman was awesome. And then from there, I took off to Rhode Island to visit mom and stepdad and some family up there, and it was very nice and relaxing. I didn't do anything really super cool or anything noteworthy, if you want to say it that way. I did have a little bit of a cold that I had to kind of nurse, but it was a nice, relaxing trip to Rhode Island. Came back here on New Year's Eve to Columbus and just kind of hung out. I didn't really go out and do anything. Still nursing a little bit of that cold, so I didn't feel like doing it. I just hung around the house, watched some hockey, and called it a very bland New Year's Eve. But, well, as I'm recording this, by the way, on, as I mentioned, January 2nd, news has broke that Mean Gene Okerlund, WWE Hall of Famer and pro wrestling personality, has passed away at the age of 76. And I wanted to take a few moments just to talk about, you know, his impact on fans and on those in the business. He was the epitome. He was the man in that early WWF expansion. I mean, he was the guy that got the scoop in the back and told you all about it. And then when he moved on to WCW, he kind of did the same thing there, and of course got his start in the AWA. He was an integral part of the presentation in professional wrestling, even though you didn't maybe recognize that. And I think that that is something that's overlooked. And I think that he has an impact on everybody in the business that is in a ring announcing or backstage interview position. You borrow things as you learn this biz. And, you know, definitely he had an impact on me as I tried to, present it my own way, but hit those key points that he always seemed to do whenever he was conducting an interview. So he certainly will be missed. So rest in peace, Mean Gene Okerlund. All right, well, let's talk about my guest for this episode. It is Mr. Daryl Banks. And many of you know Daryl from his very long run on Green Lantern in the mid to late 1990s. He is here in Columbus, Ohio. He lives here. He's born and raised in Columbus, Ohio. So I reached out to him in early December and he wanted to come on. In fact, we recorded this episode via Skype on December 15th. And at the time, you're going to hear us mention a Kickstarter because Daryl and his partner Ron Mars had a project through Ominous Press that was on Kickstarter and they were trying to get it funded. That project, of course, is called Harkins Raiders. It's a World War II epic. And I'm happy to say that it got fully funded. So that is a great thing. It looks like it's going to be a very interesting book. Very beautiful. The artwork is really, really good. If you want to check it out, I think the best thing to do is to go over to Kickstarter.com and just type in Harkins Raiders. And those folks that pledged money to get that book also get an art book of Daryl Banks's art. So it's like you're getting two books for the price of one. And like I said, we talk all about that particular project as well as his run on Green Lantern and his start in the biz. And I'm going to be very open and say that I hope to have Daryl back on, maybe to give us an update on Harkins Raiders. And he does hint at a very interesting story about how he got on the Green Lantern book that we didn't get to. And I definitely want to hear that because I think that some of the other stories that he shared were so interesting that I definitely want to have that on the PVD cast. So hopefully here in the spring, maybe in March or April, we can have Daryl back on and he can tell us about the status of Harkins Raiders and his Green Lantern story. So, all right, with that, then let's get into the Audible ad for this episode. And this podcast, of course, is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/PVDcast. As you know, Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Whatever the genre, whatever the topic, Audible has a book for you. And since you're a listener of the PVDcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Again, that's audibletrial.com/PVDcast to get your hands on a free audiobook. And with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, we're back with Daryl Banks talking about Harkins Raiders, Green Lantern, and a lot of other things. So stick around. All right, folks, I am joined here by Daryl Banks. Daryl, how are you doing here this afternoon?
I'm doing fantastic, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Let's start off real quick. I'm going to surprise you because, just because I want to. I would like to show, and I know the listeners can't see, I have my own Daryl Banks signed issue number 50 of the Green Lantern, by the way. I just wanted to throw that out there.
That's amazing. You must have had that a while because that was back when I signed with my actual signature. And after a while, having doing tons of those, that was tiring. So I shortened it to how it is today.
How is it today?
If you ever see any of my artwork, I sign it BANK dollar sign, and it's kind of like an angular.
Okay.
That I came up with, and the reason I had to do that is I had to do a signing for a store or something. I had to sign like hundreds of them and. You know, I noticed Frank Miller would sign it just FM, and I thought, I'm doing my whole signature like signing a check, and I've got to find a way to shorten it. So that's why.
I will tell you, I remember it. I had a friend that went to Kent State, and myself and a couple friends went one weekend up there, and he goes, hey, there's a comic book show in Akron. You want to go? And I'm like, okay, fine. So that's how I ended up. That was my first meeting with you, and actually, Ron Mars also signed that book, so that was probably 1995,
okay,
94.
Wow, towards the beginning.
Yeah, towards the beginning. But you know what? Let's talk about the beginning. You're a Columbus born and bred, right?
That is correct.
Were you always kind of a creative kid?
Honestly, I think all kids are creative and artistic, and they have to, you know, either be discouraged or steered out of it. You know, I think. When I was a kid drawing and stuff, everybody drew. You know, it was not unusual, but as kids grew out of it and just had stronger interests elsewhere, I just kept drawing,
whether okay.
it was crayons or you name it. So, I just kind of, I guess, got stuck with it.
And obviously, you were drawn to comic books and superheroes, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Although, you know, when I was real small, I was more into Popeye, who was, I guess, not really a superhero, but he was easier to draw, I guess. And I remember liking sharks a lot and racing cars. Couldn't draw them very well, but they were just fascinating to attempt. Probably because I liked Hot Wheels, Matchbox, and that sort of thing.
I gotcha.
So, yeah, superheroes came maybe more elementary school, middle school, I think. Especially Spider-Man. You talk about, the character that really captured my imagination as far as superheroes are concerned.
Why do you think that Spider-Man captured your imagination? Was he very relatable?
Yeah, because he was young.
Okay.
Tony Stark was, he wasn't old, but, they were adults. Whereas, Peter Parker was in school. It was like, he was in school, I was in school. He seemed shy, I was shy. So, yeah, I think relatable characters, that formula works to this day.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So you attended the Columbus College of Art and Design and graduated from there. And when did you decide that you were going to pursue art as a career in terms of working with DC or Marvel? Was it right when you graduated?
I've made the decision I wanted to go into the comics field of art, I would say senior year of high school.
Okay.
But without being able to travel, and of course the internet hadn't been invented yet back in the 1800s, I had no idea how it worked, or how to pursue it, So, that was a long trek, like the frontier days, like covered wagons, that sort of thing.
Well, you eventually did get your art out to the big two, DC and Marvel, and I'm assuming that you got a lot of rejections, because from every creator that I've talked to, there seems that those first couple of years, you get a lot of no thanks. Was that the same for you?
I would almost guarantee I got more rejections than anybody.
Really?
To the point where it really seemed like to me and everybody around me that maybe this isn't for you.
Really?
Before DC and Marvel, I worked for half a decade in the small independent companies, most of which you've never even heard of. And even then, even having been published, it still wasn't giving me much inroads in to the big two, even though there were other companies. But, being honest, I wanted to work for Marvel, really. That was the big goal, but which eventually happened to a small degree. But, yeah, I had so many Well, that was back when companies gave you rejection letters. Now, I don't think you get anything. But I had a stack so high, it looked like, not the big phone book, but that intermediate phone book you'll get?
Yeah.
Back when they had phone books. I haven't seen one of those in a while. I had a stack about that high. And my favorite was, your samples are interesting. That's like saying, I want to introduce you to this girl, but she's got a nice personality. That's what it felt like. Interesting. Wow, I have a nice personality. Wow, let down. So, whenever I would tell my students, when you go through hardships and rejections, it'll just show you is this a hobby or how bad do you want it?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you want it bad enough, you'll get that image on the inside of you and you'll just keep seeing yourself doing it. And it's like that picture won't leave you alone.
Yeah.
Even though the reality was cold, and so, but when it finally happened, it was great. I remember thinking when I finally make it to a DC or Marvel, I'll gloat about it. No, I was too tired. By the trek was too long. Like, yeah, let's get this work done.
Well, I do want to talk about some of your independent projects, but how did you eventually get to DC? Like, was it because of all this other work that you had done at the independent level, or was it somebody that said, "Hey, there's this guy you got to check out"? Daryl Banks, like how did that transition work from you getting to DC?
That's, I had gotten to the point where maybe it was, I like to believe that going from the independents to DC, I sent them so much of my independent samples with no inroads. I remember being at a convention, and that it was called the Akron Canton Con, and there was it was a husband and wife writing team that were writing Legion of Superhero. And I remember I would see them, and I would, as I was doing my convention sketches, I would sign my work by Daryl, the next artist on Legion of Superheroes, Banks. And people would go, "You're going to be working on Legion of Superheroes?" Like, yeah, I'm working with them, as a matter of fact. And they know, like, well, you're a man of Christian faith. You probably prayed about it, right? I'm like, well, yeah, of course. But, I'm letting you know this is what's going to happen. But at that point, it was almost, I was joking. I wanted it, but I never really thought, remember, I had this big stack of rejections. It just didn't look like it was going to work. So you know, my friends and I that were at the show, we were laughing about, yeah, you're going to be doing Legion. So not even maybe a year later, my first gig was with doing fill-in stuff for DC, Legion of Superheroes, with that same couple. So when I see them again, I said, you know, bring it in. You guys did it for me. Thanks. Just give me a big hug. I appreciate what you did for me. And they're like, what are you talking about? Well, you heard what I said at that convention, and you told DC, and you got me my gig. And we're like, no, we didn't. There's like they had to even remember us meeting, and then they said, well, we're writers, we're not editors. We didn't tell DC anything. It was like one of those, can you hear the Twilight Zone music? You know what I mean? So
yeah.
So the first thing they had me do. DC had an initiative at the time to have young artists that nobody had heard of, even though, like I said, half a decade, but still unknown
mm-hmm.
to them,
mm-hmm.
just to do two or three pages in this Legion of Superheroes annual. And I did some. They liked them and said, hey, do you want to do some more? Now, remember, before, you know, I was working in the independents, and before that, working in a shoe department. So DC asked me, do you want to do more work? It's kind of like, would you like a raise? You know, it's kind of like,
yeah.
Let me think about it. Yeah, yeah, of course I do. So, you know, it just went for more Legion stuff till we eventually get to Green Lantern. But there's a story in between there, and if we have time, I'll go into that too.
Sure. Well, let's go back for a minute, because I know that you mentioned you worked for a variety of independent companies. And one of them I have heard of, Innovation, which was based out of Wheeling, West Virginia, not that far from... Yeah, not that far from my hometown, and they had a lot of books that were tied into popular titles, like Quantum Leap, and then they have a horror one with Child's Play and all that jazz. But you worked on a book called Cyberpunk. Can you maybe give a little... Yeah, could you give a little summary to the listeners as to what Cyberpunk was all about?
Cyberpunk was based on the genre created by sci-fi writer William Gibson, I believe, and... What the story was about, it was about keep in mind, as I'm thinking about it, none of this made much sense to me because I knew nothing about the computer at the time. But thinking back, he was like the main character, I think his name was Topo. He was a hacker. And it was kind of set into the, you know, in the future, you know, young hacker versus evil corporation type of thing. But still, this was, all I could think of was, this is it. Someone's going to be able to buy this book at a store. You know, this is my first published comic. And I remember when I had the first printed copy in my hands, I was at a convention in Chicago. And I remember walking up and down the hall, almost like a proud father carrying an infant, like, this is it. This is it. I did it. After all this not working out. And, you know, I can hardly look at it. The artwork was just... Let's just say it was a little bit young in my career, and I'll just leave it. I'll be kind to myself.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah, that was early work because it was in full color. It was supposed to be all watercolor, but it ended up being mixed media. Mixed media meaning I didn't have enough watercolor to do all the things I wanted to do, and time was of the essence. So that's how Cyberpunk came to be, and also. While I was working on that, I was beginning some pencil work. It was a backup story for, I believe it's called the Hero Alliance.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was another one of their big books, yeah.
But you've actually heard of Innovation.
I have.
They were the first, so...
Because they made some noise in that... They were, what, 91, 92-ish? Right around that time frame. They made some noise, and, you know, a lot of people, I think, at least in my circle of friends... were really high on Innovation because it was, you know, something different, something new. It wasn't DC, it wasn't Marvel. The fact that it was 45 minutes down the road from my hometown too, you know, kind of made some noise. So how was the experience overall? Did you enjoy working with the folks there at Innovation?
Well, I was new, so it was actually very difficult.
Oh, really? Okay.
However, when I think about it, I was given... Remember, this is my very first work. I honestly really didn't know how to do this thing called comics. It was more like making it up as I go along.
Okay.
I don't consider myself to be some kind of master expert even now, but back then we're talking about a green rookie. I'd have to get better to reach green rookie, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That bad. But I remember the editor was always showing me examples of how it's done, and he would show me Bart Sears and Ron Lim, you know, guys who have made a big name for themselves, you know, eventually, but, you know, even their early work, you know, like, I think about Bart Sears, his stuff was never bad. It's kind of like, it's never like, oh, that's early Bart Sears. It's like, even back then, his stuff was spectacular. It's like, it's not fair. I remember seeing, it was a scene Bart had drawn of the main characters from Hero Alliance, and I want to say they were in an alley, and he had drawn, you know, every brick in the wall and the fire escape and all that kind of stuff, and I'm thinking, is this what comics is? Am I going to have to do stuff like that? I can't do that, you know. But, you know, with practice and drive, you'll be surprised what you're capable of. But yeah, it was my early years were pretty difficult. And of course, it was hardly any money, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And why should there be? But wow. But still a fond memory because you got to start somewhere.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, let's talk about Green Lantern. And you said you had a great story in there, but I'm just going to set it up that, you know, you joined Green Lantern on issue 50. And had a very long run, some 80, 90 some issues you did because you went.
It was off and on for over like a 7.5, eight year period.
Yeah, yeah. So, how do you feel about being involved in probably one of the more memorable storylines of Green Lantern? Of course, the Emerald Twilight storyline that I'm referring to. So, do you have any memories that you'd like to share of creating that world?
That was something that. You know, it was a surprise because when I was doing the fill-ins for Legion of Superheroes, I would always talk about ideas I had for Green Lantern. Green Lantern was never a character I was really big into. I just, you know, I remember liking the artists that were on the book, you know, the Gil Kane and the Neil Adams and Dave Gibbons and artists like that. And I liked the idea that you could have this ring that you could create things, but even with the great artists they were just making real simple things. And I remember thinking, well, you know, if as an artist, if I had a ring that could create what I think about, you know, if I'm fighting someone, I'm not creating a boxing glove. You know, I might create a gauntlet, but it'd have spikes on it. You know,
yeah.
Make a big, you know, anime-looking cannon, that sort of thing. And I would sketch different things like to that effect, not really thinking, you know, I'd like to draw Green Lantern. It's more like I drew Green Lantern in sketchbooks mainly. And as a matter of fact, Kyle Rayner's costume, a lot of the elements came from it was a Jon Stewart costume I had come up with, just for myself, just messing around. So as I'm working on Legion of Superheroes, the assistant editor, I would tell him, you know, I had these ideas, never knowing he was also the assistant editor for Green Lantern. So he was going back and telling him, like, hey, this young guy, he's got some ideas. And they eventually wanted to, you know, they wanted to, you know, consider me for the book. But I guess to keep this from being 3 hours long, there was a lot that happened from that transition to when I first came on the book to what actually happened, because there was like a false start, you could say. It was going to be a different writer with a different idea, but it for some reason it didn't gain traction. So we brought in Ron Mars, and then we got what we ended up getting. Matter of fact, with the original writer, I even did 4 pages, 5 pages, which. They were never published, but I have copies of the pencil pages. I mean, there were some similarities, but I do remember when I was finally confirmed to do the book, I thought, Hal Jordan, yeah, he's got a real legacy with the company. Yeah, that's a good thing to be known for. My editor goes, well, we're doing something with Hal, and he's not going to end up being the main guy anymore. And I remember just being like the air was let out of the balloon, like, oh, no. And he goes, well, wait. You'll be glad you're on the ground floor of this. There's going to be some great things happen. So at first I kind of had my doubts, but it's like, oh, I get it. Now it's like, now I see.
And you, yeah. And this storyline introduces, of course, the next Green Lantern, Kyle Rayner, and you had a little hand in co-creating, Kyle. So what was the process of creating Kyle? Was it, a pretty smooth, creation of that character, or was there some bumps in the road?
I think the creation was pretty smooth because Ron Mars and I, we our ideas gel really well. As a writer, because he knows so many established artists, he thinks artistically. It's
okay. Yeah.
So often he'll think this will look cool, even in the script. Like, well, let's do this, and this. I think that will look cool. You know, he's telling a good story, and he's aware that comics are a visual medium. You know, when you have friends like Jim Starlin and you know, at the time, Bernie Wrightson, I guess you would think pretty good. So I remember this was the mid-90s. You talk about image and larger-than-life gimmicks. Some of my early Kyle Rayner costumes, they look 90s, all right. And I wanted to put all this detail to kind of compete, you know, with what was going on. And my editor goes, no, that's not what we're doing. And I'm thinking, why not? Like a little kid, but I want it. He goes, you know, if you do this really detailed costume after 22 pages of this issue, you will hate yourself. Is it? You'll be thankful we kept this, you know, as simple as we did. He was so right. Kevin Dooley, you were right. Yes, you were.
So, with Green Lantern, was there anything that you would have liked to see done differently with that character?
Done differently?
Yeah. I mean, even in the modern storylines, was there anything that you think would make, what would make Green Lantern just over the top in regards to your ideas about that character?
I'm actually very pleased that what they ended up doing with him. I can't think of one thing at the moment. I would have. No, I can't think of. Honestly, I'm just surprised he lasted as long as he did, because, like I said, this was the 90s where you had gimmicks to the left and gimmicks to the right. I thought he had maybe a year, 2 years.
Really?
But here we're talking about him in 2018. I never saw that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, a lot of 90s things came and went. You know, Superman died, he's alive again. Batman wasn't Batman, it was Dick Grayson, and then, you know, it's Bruce Wayne again. You know what I mean?
That
was just how it worked. So I'm thinking, yeah, you know, Howell come back and we'll forget all about Kyle Rayner. But I think because Green Lantern was a book that wasn't doing very well at first, we were allowed to do what we wanted to do. The suits weren't really picking over and micromanaging. It's almost like if you ever hear how Stanley created Spider-Man, Amazing Fantasy wasn't doing that well, so his editor didn't care what he did. Mm-hmm. So when creators are left alone to create, we could do some amazing things.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about a project you have coming up here. Through Ominous Press, you have a new project with, of course, your old pal Ron Mars called Harkins Raiders. Can you give a little brief summary of what that project's all about to the listeners?
Harkins Raiders, it's a World War II action-adventure story. It centers on main character George Harkins and the SOE, also known as the Special Operations Executive. Now, it's a fictional story, but the SOE actually did exist. They were a UK branch of, like, a covert part of their military. And Harkins Raiders, they're tasked with, the team goes to Finland to get some secrets that the Nazis were involved in something, and then make it all the way back, you know, past enemy lines, back to the UK. So what's interesting is that Ron Mars' father was in World War II. He was part of a bomber group. They flew a B-24J bomber. And I remember actually being at the Air Force Museum in Dayton, and I saw the jackets that I thought, well, wait a minute, if this is that bomber group, and I took a picture, I said, Ron, is this your dad's, one of your dad's jackets? Said, yeah, it is. So, you know, he has a direct connection to World War II, so I think that's another thing that really appealed to Ron. And of course, with the rapport that Ron and I have, I knew this would be something that I would be able to get into. I don't consider myself a history buff, but I like the fact that, you know, a good story is a good story. You know, and I feel like, you know, World War II is it has a lot of romanticism, I guess, behind it. And of course, the action side of it. You know, when you think about even Indiana Jones, that's around that era. You know, you can get, you know, you don't need lasers and robots and all that sort of thing to really grip an audience, even a young audience. So that's what we're going for with this.
Do you find it challenging to change your artistic style from what is a traditional, like, superhero science fiction type of style to a World War II style?
I really feel my style, how I approach, is the same.
I
have a lifelike approach to how I draw. I think that comes from my art school background, you know, working in real life, you know, which is ironic because I really like, you know, Japanese comics and animation, all that, but it doesn't, that style doesn't affect me, but their use of dynamic camera and action does. But how I draw Harkins Raiders, I feel, is about the same as how I draw normally. It's just, I draw how I draw, almost no matter what's in front of me. So hopefully, maybe that sense of action and camera angle that will translate well to what I'm doing for this. Because the pages that I've done, I feel do that. Some of the pages are actually even previewed on the Kickstarter page, if anyone wants to take a look at it. Matter of fact, I've got the page up right now, and it's like, oh yeah, there's quite a few pages here, even the cover. So hopefully that'll grab them.
And you also have another book that is coming out through Ominous Press, the Black Book series, The Art of Daryl Banks. That's also slated to come out right around March. Is that correct?
Well, that's if it funds, and I'll say when it funds.
When it funds, that's right. That's right.
When it funds, you got to be positive. Might as well. It takes just as much energy. The thing about the Black Book is that this is the very first time my work has been collected in a book edition. It's something that I've wanted to do for 10 years or more. Just never got around to doing it. I'm just overly picky on what would go in it. So with Ominous Press, when they do their Kickstarters, they include an art book with the artist, whatever the project they're doing. And I thought, for a first time, the format that Ominous Press uses, I'm very honored to make this the first. I'm almost glad that this is the first one. So hopefully that'll be an incentive for people to pledge. They'll go, oh, you know, not only are we getting Harkins Raiders, but we're getting some work people have seen. It's a combination of some published things, a lot of my commission work, which they may have seen on social media, and then some sketches and things that they have not seen. So I feel that that's a great incentive for people to take a look at this.
That's right. The Kickstarter, of course, has, as of many people are listening, this has already ended. And at the time that we're recording this, you're really close to having it fully funded, if I remember correctly.
We're getting close.
I
feel very optimistic. You know, I look at the fact that almost on a regular basis, someone is responding on Twitter that they just backed it. It seems like it's coming, you know, 2 and 3 a day. And I'm very honored by that because, you know, it's something that's totally voluntary. And so hopefully we're appealing to a vast amount of people and believe in what we're doing.
Well, let's wrap up with just a few quick questions that are kind of miscellaneous questions, if you will. What character would you love to work on that you never got a chance to work on?
Ooh, that's quite a few, but if I had to limit it, I...
Phil, you can give us a couple if you like. That's fine.
Okay. Actually, it expands different countries. I'm a big fan of Ultraman, the Ultraman franchise in Japan. I would love to do an Ultraman comic. But as far as Marvel or DC, Avengers.
Okay.
My hands on Earth's Mightiest Heroes. And also, I think I would have a lot of fun doing Shazam.
You know, really?
Original Captain Marvel.
Okay.
I think the Marvel fan would be a fun sandbox to play in.
Well, what advice do you have for any people, any new creators out there who are getting into the biz?
All creators, this probably appeals to almost no matter what you're doing, whether it's art or writing, is even though what you want to do is enjoyable, it's going to feel like work at some point. Even when you reach your goal, you know, when I thought, well, it's all going to feel like heaven when I work at DC and Marvel, whatever. At like 2 a.m. and you've got a tight deadline, it'll feel the same as if you're mopping a floor or something, which I've had to do in my life. It'll feel like work, and you'll be reminded this is what I love to do. Even right about now, I just feel like I feel like just turning off the light and going to sleep. But you got to keep going. It'll feel like work. So don't be discouraged if you're feeling disappointed. Like, oh, this is harder than I thought. Well, you know, it was hard for you to reach your goal. So, you know, keep in mind that it's fun, but it's still work. You know, it's not to sound facetious, but and also keep things above board when it comes to your taxes, saving your receipts, that sort of thing. Because I didn't get a lot of information when it comes to that sort of thing. So the business side of it, I guess, you'll keep your creativity and your business side, keep them nice and balanced.
You know what? That's great advice. And I think I think you're the first creator to ever mention that there, you know, there's a business side that you got to be on top of, or otherwise you're going to have a lot more headaches.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's there's the information is even more readily available now than when I started, but you'll find out things like, you know, as an action figure collector, I discovered through H&R Block that was tax deductible, because I made a a comment at a convention about I use action figures to work out poses, and Bart Sears said, well, you know, you could write that off. And I thought, oh, you're kidding. He said, no, you know, ask your tax preparer. So I asked H&R Block, can I write off action figures if I use it for my work? He almost didn't let me finish. Like, oh, of course, you know, if it's for your work, that's the supplies. So I'm like, I said, well, I didn't buy the toys to work for Mario, which doesn't matter. If they were part of the process, they're tax deductible. And I thought, yes! I would say, you know, let you know, young creators get that information about the business side, keep them balanced.
There you go. Do you have any appearances that you're going to be at here in the next few months?
Well, 2018, that's my convention circuit is pretty much ended. That was, my last show was in Akron, but for 2019, let's see, we kick off my tour with the Great Lakes Comic Con in Warren, Michigan in February. And I almost average a show a month, give or take.
Okay. All right. Well, where can folks find out about where you're going to be? So social media plugs or whatnot, so folks can head on up to Warren, Michigan or wherever you're going to be and hang out and say hello to you.
Oh, that would be great. I can be found on Twitter at Real Bankster. I'm on Facebook, Daryl Banks, and on Instagram as GL Prime.
There you go. Well, Daryl, thank you very much for sitting down and talking with me today. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, John. Had a great time.
Thank you. Well, with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, ladies and gentlemen, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Daryl Banks. I want to thank Daryl for coming on the PVD cast. And if you want to keep tabs on Daryl, definitely follow him online, as he mentioned, all of the social media accounts where he'll be giving updates as to the progress of Harkins Raiders. You can actually even go to Ominous Press's website, ominouspress.com, and you can buy the book over there as well, since the Kickstarter has ended. And I'm so glad that it actually got fully funded and then some. So that's awesome. Definitely, ladies and gentlemen, check it out. And speaking of a few other things to check out, I have a couple of wrestling shows I want to let you know about. In fact, one I am going to be at. And that show I'm going to be at is this Saturday, January 5th. Unsanctioned Pro Wrestling is having an event here in Columbus, Ohio at 1444 Demarest Road. Doors open at 5 p.m. I don't know when the bell time is. I'm just going as a fan. I'm going to go check out the action. I've heard some really good things about Unsanctioned Pro. So me and some friends are going to go out. So if you see me in the crowd, stop by and say hello. And if you're interested, all you have to do is go to Facebook and search for Unsanctioned Pro Wrestling, and you'll get all of the details. My friends at Ohio Championship Wrestling return to action January 12th in Akron, Ohio, 7 o'clock bell time. They're at a new venue called Chaparral's Event Center, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. The main event is going to be a midget street fight. That's right, so you don't want to miss that. You can check out all of the details for that show by going to ocwrestling.net, or again, if you're on Facebook, just searching for Ohio Championship Wrestling, and you'll get all the details. Well, let me tell you where you can get in touch with me if you'd like to. You can find me on Twitter at PVDMVP. You can shoot me an email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com, or you can leave me a nice little note over on the Facebook page of this podcast, that, of course, being facebook.com/PVDcast. And don't forget to tell everybody you know about this great podcast. It's available pretty much wherever you find podcasts. But if you're stumped and you're like, I don't know where to go, easiest place and the surefire place to get your hands on every single episode is over at pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly. But as I said, it's available through iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. All of the big names in podcasting have this podcast. So just search for PVDcast. Sometimes you have to search for PVDcast and put my name, John Orlando, to find it. I don't know why. Technology people. Sometimes it's a pain in the ass. What can I say? But nonetheless, tell some folks about it. Let's get those numbers even higher than they were last year. Last year was a great year. It was a banter year, as you know from my previous episode, Summation 2018. The 18 was a great year for this podcast, and let's make the 19 even better. So with that, I will chat at each and every one of you. Later. Stay righteous. Stay independent.